Good afternoon, everyone. It is 1:35 p.m. on Wednesday, July 8th, 2020. This is an informal hearing on case number PU-09-668, Baldwin Wynn siting application. I'm Commissioner Brian Crosius, joined by Commissioner Julie Fedorchuk and Commissioner Randy Chrisman. I don't have any opening comments, Commissioner Chrisman.
Nor do I.
Okay, and before I turn it over to the portfolio holder for her opening comments and to move forward, staff, could you, or Brian, could you introduce yourself, please?
Sure. Brian Johnson, attorney here at the PSC.
And then Casey, for the record, could you introduce yourself and then your members as well?
Will do. Thank you. Casey Fury with Crowley Fleck, appearing on behalf of Baldwin Wynn LLC. There are several representatives with NextEra Energy Resources that are appearing on behalf of Baldwin today, and they're joining us via video conference. Jeff Bryce is a project manager. Dustin Jones is the environmental project lead. And Tracy Davis is a senior attorney with NextEra.
Okay, thank you. Again, this portfolio is this is in Julie or Commissioner Fedorchuk's portfolio, so I'll turn it over to her.
Thank you, Brian. So I appreciate everybody gathering for this discussion, and I'm open to going about this however you prefer, Casey. But did you guys have any prepared comments you want to make in terms of a presentation?
Not initially. We thought it might be kind of helpful to take a step back and explain how we got where we are today, and then maybe just briefly walk through our filing, which kind of prompted the request for the informal.
Sure, that would be great, and then okay. We can. I have a number of questions, but I think they can wait until you guys set the stage with that background information. So,
okay, great. So in July 2010, the commission issued an order approving the approximate 102-megawatt Baldwin Wind Energy Center, which is comprised of 64 turbines, and that facility is located here in Burleigh County. In preparation of planned project improvement activities, which are explained in more detail in Baldwin's subsequent certification filing, which was submitted to the commission on May 18th. It's docket number 144. So in anticipation of that filing and those project improvements, Baldwin assessed and reviewed the project in detail. And after this review, it became apparent that there was a discrepancy with respect to setbacks and as they were referenced in the project order. And so in preparation of the improvement certification filing that was submitted, Baldwin met with staff back in March to discuss the proposed project improvement activities, as well as to discuss this discrepancy with respect to the setback language that was identified. And as a result of those discussions, staff had recommended that Baldwin submit a filing kind of walking through this situation and what we found and kind of highlighting and bringing that issue to the commission's attention. And I think that'll become more clear as I walk through our May 12th letter, and that is docket number 143. And so I'm going to start on the top of page 2 of docket number 143, because I think it just does a really good job of outlining kind of the issues that are at play here. So in 2010, when the project's order was issued, the commission did not have any rules or regulations governing setbacks applicable to wind facilities. However, at that time, Baldwin did voluntarily propose certain setbacks applicable to the project. Baldwin proposed voluntary setbacks of 1.1 times the turbine tip height from transmission lines, roads, and railroads. And that quote-unquote is the language that exists in the application that was submitted. I do have copies, if you'd like, of just the one page from the application that was originally submitted that contains that particular language.
Say, Casey, I hate to interrupt you, but I just thought of something that I missed at the onset, and I just want to state this so everyone is aware. This is an informal hearing involving only undisputed facts. If there are any disputed facts, we'll close the informal hearing and issue a notice of hearing, so I apologize for not mentioning that earlier.
Not a problem.
Casey, as long as you're paused mm-hmm. for a second, is that the language that's in both the application and then ultimately the order?
Yeah, so there's a slight difference there. So if you look at the language that's actually in the application, it's right above Table 8 there. And so when it references the 440 feet, so it's, I mean, that second paragraph, it says Baldwin Wind proposes setbacks of 440 feet from transmission lines, roads, and railroads. And then it goes on to kind of explain other setbacks applicable to the facility. In that sentence, there's no reference to property boundaries. That's really the setback discrepancy that's at issue here. There is, though, a reference to property lines within Table 8. So if you jump down to Table 8, it says property lines.
Right.
And so what got copied then over into the order is the language that you see above. So that 440 feet, and it references transmission lines, roads, railroads, and property lines. And so that's finding of fact number 40 in the order.
Can you read it again? I don't have the order. Mm-hmm. I meant to print one out, but what does the order language say?
It says Baldwin Wind has proposed setbacks of 440 feet, 1.1 times turbine height from existing transmission lines, roads, railroads, and property boundaries. Okay. So the reference to property boundaries, this is where it comes from, is that Table 8.
Got it.
In reviewing the project, it became apparent that there are 24 turbines that are located closer than this 440 feet from property boundaries. However, those instances all pertain to participating landowners. And so upon review, Baldwin Wind believes that there was an inadvertent omission from the application and that the reference to property lines was really intended to state non-participating landowners' property lines instead of just this generic property lines.
Do you want to wait with questions until...
Go ahead, Randy.
Mm-hmm. So... what is this from? Is this from the application?
Yes, it is.
So on docket 143 on page 2, where you kind of started,
mm-hmm.
you said Baldwin proposed voluntary setbacks of 110% of turbine height from transmission lines, roads, and railroads. Well, it looks to me like they also proposed it from property lines.
And, Commissioner, we go on to discuss that in the following sentence. It says a property line setback of 440 feet from property lines was also referenced discreetly in the table, but there's no additional detail or context that's discussed in the application regarding the setback. And so listening, you know, we've done a very thorough review of the project docket. This project's been in operation for a decade now. There was no discussion during the subsequent work session that followed the project hearing. We've requested audio of the project hearing. It looks like that cannot be located. Mm-hmm. And so we're really left with a gap here. And so as I'll explain as I go through this, you know, subsequent things have happened since this time. And so during the March meeting with staff, we informed staff that there were the 24 turbines that are located within 440 feet of participating landowners' property lines. So there are no turbines that are located within 440 feet of non-participating landowners' property lines. And so this is not a result of the proposed improvement activities that are discussed in more detail in Baldwin's subsequent filing. As the project exists now, there are these 24 turbines that don't meet that threshold.
If the language had included non-participating landowners, I'm assuming, or would that have been also considered a voluntary proposal as well?
Exactly, because there were no codified setbacks at this time. And so even the commission's current setbacks that we do see, they're very specific to non-participating landowners' property boundaries. There has never been, and there are not currently, setbacks that apply to participating landowners' property boundaries. And so, you know, upon further review, it's believed that there was just this omission of this word. The landowners that are implicated by this, they have all agreed to the locations of the turbines in their lease agreements. They're required to acknowledge and authorize the siting of the turbines, the location, so they're provided with an exhibit that provides for the location of the turbines, and then they authorize the turbines. So this isn't an instance of where anyone's objected. These are all authorized locations. And so really it's kind of clarifying this discrepancy that we see between the language and the order and then the project as it exists. And so I guess simply stated, this isn't an instance where turbines were built in the wrong locations, if that makes sense. The turbines were built in the locations as they were presented to the commission. It's just kind of cleaning up what we believe is really just kind of an administrative gap that exists. And
go ahead and finish your sentence.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner. And so after our discussion with staff, we also highlighted that this discrepancy was also noted throughout the project's history, and it's noted in the docket. And so back in 2012, Wank, who was the commission's third-party construction inspector, they provided a report on their findings with respect to the project. And this is docket number 126. And they do note, and it's on page 3-2 of that report, they note specifically instances where turbines did not meet that 1.1 times turbine height from property boundary setback. And they specifically note, and I'm just going to quote from their report because I think it's really helpful. In these instances, the turbines did not pose a threat to public safety. The boundaries proximate to the turbines were within publicly inaccessible areas. NextEra is technically abiding by current regulations. Wank does not consider this to be a concern, but the finding of fact number 40 for the project may need to be clarified. Finding of fact number 40 is the one that contains that language that's at discussion today.
And what was the date of that? Of Wink's report?
December 2012. And so after that report, in reviewing the docket, we see a lot of back and forth between Baldwin and commission staff engaging in various discussion regarding compliance items. However, this was never mentioned. And so it's our belief that this was really just a non-issue because participating landowners have the ability, you know, to authorize the siting of the turbines on their property, and this was a, you know, proposed setback which we believe was intended for non-participating landowners.
Brian, is that considered the same thing as a waiver when it was included in the contract language that this is the location of the turbine, the landowner signs off on it?
It does appear to be very similar.
So basically, if that finding of fact 40 had included 440 feet from the transmission lines, roads, railroads, and property boundaries of non-participating landowners, it would be accurate to the project as it was constructed.
That's correct, yes.
Okay. Have you had any... Oh, go ahead, Randy. I'm kind of moving ahead to the next.
Okay. This is kind of a series of questions. How many turbines are there?
How many? 64.
64. So, not too far from half of them fall within this category of being near property lines. So, I'm trying to figure out how this ends up being so many. Are these situations where, and you said they're all participants, so where a person has participated, they have a turbine on this, say, a quarter of land, and they own the next quarter, and that's the property line we're talking about? Or is it a different situation where an individual leased to have one put over there, but not by his or her property over here, but now their neighbor did over here, and it's right by their property. So I'm trying to figure out if when you say they're participants, are they participants in a different area or right here?
My understanding is that they're all participants within the project, and there are kind of a couple of different scenarios. There may be a turbine that's located within 440 feet of a property line that adjoins another parcel of land that actually hosts infrastructure. I would, though, defer to Jeff, the project manager, on the phone if he has any additional detail or context to provide.
Thank you, Casey. No, I think that's very accurate, that the parcels in question are adjoining parcels that both have a wind easement on those parcels. So if parcel A has a turbine on it, the parcel next door also has a wind easement on it.
And so how do you divide that up? Is it just because there's a quarter section line or a section line or something there? Or would a 80 or a 40 constitute a different parcel? Or I'm trying to figure out what the issue really is.
Yes, sir. So it's not only directed towards boundary lines for sections or quarter sections. It could be any subdivision of a property that a landowner has placed on their specific parcel. We consider all of those to be boundary lines.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that.
So have you, what kind of communication have you had with the landowners on your revisions and improvement?
Jeff, did you hear the question?
I did, thank you. So in July of last year, we started our permitting process for Baldwin with our Grass Lake Township public hearing. That was followed up in October by the Eklund Township public hearing. Additionally, two letters were sent to landowners. One initially informing them of the upcoming maintenance exercise and repowering. And then again, over the past few weeks, just to ensure that no landowners had any follow-up questions. Typically, during these exercises, we schedule a construction dinner where we actually invite our landowners to a dinner that we host, invite our construction team so they can have those questions answered in person. Unfortunately, with current circumstances and mass gatherings, we were unable to have those dinners, so we elected to send another letter to landowners. Additionally, follow-up phone calls were left and voicemails if we're able to communicate with landowners, but a great deal of communication has taken place with our Baldwin landowners.
And in that communication, Jeff, did you just how much detail about the changes that are going to occur, the increase in size of the blades, the acoustic modeling, the flicker studies, how much of that was provided to them?
So all of that was provided to both townships during our application process and made public. Additionally, any questions that we had based on turbine locations or changes in rotor diameter were handled on one-on-one communications.
Did you receive some of those from the landowners?
Minimally, most landowners understood that the process in place was just replacing interior components of the turbine as well as new blades. But the majority of questions were to turbine locations and ensuring that turbines would, A, maintain their locations, and B, that they would continue to host wind farms on their property.
Okay. Do you think that they understand that the increase in the size of the blades does increase the sound and create more shadow flicker?
I think that was received, yes.
Okay. And how would they know that if they're just looking at your letters? Did you include some of that information?
So all those details were provided in the application, our public application to the townships. And both of those public hearings, we had no comments from the public based on shadow flicker or sound.
Okay, but for the folks that got the letters from you, did you include any of that in them? Because I'm not surprised you didn't get any questions at the township hearings, or I'm guessing most people didn't even know they happened.
Specific details relating to sound and shadow were not included in the letters.
Did you have any vague references to the potential changes or impacts that the upgrades will have?
Most of the communication and letters mostly relating to the increase in size of the rotor diameters and reassuring landowners that turbine locations weren't moving. There was most likely no reference to increases in shadow or zone.
Okay. And Dustin, would you mind just going into a little detail regarding the average increase in sound that was modeled with respect to the project, just to help put it in context?
I did look at the acoustic modeling a little bit, but...
Sure. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for the question. So on the sound level side, the blades are increasing approximately 15 feet in length, and we redid the sound and shadow flicker studies. The sound level increases on average are only 0.23 dBA increase, with a range of no increase up to maybe one additional decibel, and all DBA stay within the current. There was no siting criteria when the project was built as far as sound levels go, but they meet the commission. At the time, we were proposing and filed certification the 50 DBA limit, so there's no exceedance of 50 DBA. And then on the shadow flicker side, there were some very nominal increases of maybe 1 or 2 hours per year on average, and they all remain below the industry standard of roughly 30 hours per year.
I have a question. I guess this all ties in. So the original construction was, now I've lost it, but it was, okay, so 80 meter was the hub height. And then 82.5 was the rotor diameter. So if we were to take half of that and add that to the hub height, the tip of the blade would be just a few feet under 400 feet in length. And then if you add 15, you'd be at 415 feet from rotor, the tip of the blade at its highest point to the ground. How many homes are within 415 feet or 413 feet?
How many homes?
Right.
So the project was sited pursuant to the 1,400-foot setback from occupied residences.
Okay. So you're just talking about property line.
Yes, that's
okay.
Correct.
Okay. So no homes within that?
No.
Okay. Couple other questions. On numbers, I'm looking at, let's see, the statement from John DiDonata that was included in your filing on May 18th. I'm looking at number 7. Let's see, it says here, project turbines will comply with the voluntary 1.1 times the turbine height setback from transmission lines, roads, and property boundaries of non-participating landowners. Should that be clarified to say, except for the 5 turbines that, because you mentioned in the cover letter of that there's 5 turbines that don't meet that setback from the center line? Or am I getting this confused somehow? So there's 5 turbines... In addition to the 24 that are too close to the setback that was established in the original order for all property lines, there's these 5 turbines that don't meet the setback from the roads, right?
Yes, that's correct. Okay. And that's with respect to the new existing, the commission's current setbacks. And so this kind of gets into the discussion regarding retroactive application. From our perspective, there's nothing that's occurring by way of the certification filing that would automatically retroactively apply current siting criteria to a project that's been previously cited by the commission. So this isn't an instance where there was an order issued and the project wasn't, you know, constructed and it came back and it had to recertify and get a new order. This is kind of separate from that procedure.
But the 1.1 times the height of the turbine plus 75 feet from the center line, when was that When did that become the standard?
I don't want to say with absolute certainty, but I believe that would have been approximately 2013.
Okay, that's part of the right.
So
setbacks.
Yeah. So in paragraph 7 there, the reference is to the setbacks that were voluntarily committed to within the order, not with respect to the existing setbacks as they exist today.
Okay. Got it. It seems like it might be worth noting that in the, I guess you've got it in the cover letter, but
that
in the certification too, you know, just noting that you've got this waiver from the townships for on that, or not a waiver, but they don't object to infringing on that, even though you're not really required to meet that standard. You've also gone kind of the next step to get their approval on that.
Incorporating that into the actual certification document, Commissioner,
yeah.
In the future.
It seems like it would clarify number 7 a little bit there if that was
understood.
Added.
You know, going back to the hub height, you're going to add the blades will be 15 feet longer. Is that correct?
Correct.
So if my math is correct, the existing turbines and the blades would be at 397.8 feet. If we add 8 feet to that, they would be 412.8. Very from the tip of the rotor to the ground. And 1.1 would actually wind up at 453.8. So is that going, that won't be accurate going forward to say that regardless you're still within the 440 feet or under the 440 feet from a property line? And I know that was voluntary when the order was drafted, but it seems like the language doesn't meet that.
So the increase in height doesn't implicate any additional turbines than existly are included within that group of 24 turbines that don't meet that setback, that general property line setback. So it doesn't implicate any additional turbines. But I think I see what you're getting at, Commissioner, is that reference to 440 there doesn't clarify that they'll now be 453 under that calculation. Is that what you're saying?
Right. Right.
Okay. Mm.
Okay. Have any of the property owners changed since the original project?
Jeff, did you hear the question?
I did. Wonderful. I would assume so, Commissioner. I don't have exact details on ownership in front of me.
And do you get those notifications so you're in contact with the new, the current property owners on everything?
That's correct. So when ownership changes, albeit through selling of a property or deeding of a property, we are notified through the county assessor's office that a tax roll has changed on that property. That then updates our system for entertainment purposes.
All right. What's the point of changing the blades out, or the benefit of changing out the blades and making them longer, if you cannot increase the nameplate capacity?
So, great question. It's really relating to efficiency. By putting the new blades on the turbine, I like to liken it to a better fuel efficiency in your car. This just increases the miles per gallon, if you will, or our NCF for the site will increase due to this new blade design and a little bit of a larger blade. In addition, it'll also increase the longevity of the site. It's easier on the gearboxes than the blades and with inside of the nacelle.
Okay. So does your production factor go up then? So say you produce the same amount, but you do it more frequently?
That's correct. So we're able to capture wind at lower speeds.
All right. Okay. And then how are you disposing of the old blades? How many blades will it be, and how are you disposing of them?
So I apologize. I can do a quick math on 64 times 3, but call it 200 blades, 190-ish.
192.
Those blades have yet to be contracted through a landfill or a disposal facility yet. However, if we look back at the Ashtabula project that was in front of the commission last year for the same activity, those blades were headed to the Bismarck Waste Facility. Blades are cut down into more manageable sizes with on the project once they're loaded from the nacelle. And then those blades are hauled off to the most usually appropriate disposal facility, whether that be the most environmentally sound place as well as location without hauling them halfway across the country.
And do you know how are they disposed of then from there?
So I wouldn't be able to say how Bismarck Waste Facility handles there once they receive shipment. However, there are multiple avenues. Recycling is one thing, a newer technology that's coming about on how to find newer ways to recycle the older blades. But I wouldn't have specifics on how they intend to handle it.
Is that where you're anticipating these will go?
So no contract has been signed, but as I said, that's where we've taken blades in the past, and I assume that's where we'll spot these blades as well.
Okay.
On that point, you said they're cut to be a more manageable size. About how much? Each one cut in half, cut in thirds, cut in fourths? Because my understanding is cutting them is something of an air quality issue with fiberglass shavings and such.
So it would be specific on each site as to how many segments the blade is cut into. However, the cutting of the blades is something that is highly a scientific, if you will, process. There's a shroud that goes around the blade as to not allow for particulates in the air to escape during the cutting process.
But you don't know about how much they're cut.
So they would be cut into usually a 53-foot trailer, something that does not require an excess load, anything like that, to a more manageable size.
Okay, thank you.
Basically, three pieces. Each blade converts to three pieces.
Yes, sir. For this instance, it could be three. I wouldn't know the exact process that they're going to use for this one.
Okay. Well, one concern I have about this discussion right now, because I did reach out to it's been a while, but I talked to the DEQ about the blade disposal issue. From a legal standpoint, once those blades are delivered to the waste disposal site, then they would assume the responsibility if down the road, and I believe they're being buried, and they had to dig them up, but then that facility would assume that risk, correct? And in effect, ownership has been transferred of the waste material?
That makes sense, yes.
And it's considered solid waste, but that could potentially change. But then any company hauling old blades, is that a reasonable assumption that they no longer assume ownership of those blades once they're delivered?
That sounds correct.
Then it becomes a DEQ issue if something should arise in the future.
Correct. And that's why they manage waste facilities for things like that.
Mm. You got to turn your thing on.
Oops. Sorry. That's why they track and monitor waste facilities is for things like this. If there is ever a change in classification of materials they have there. But it would make sense that they don't own them forever. The company, once they accept delivery of them, would be responsible for them.
the waste disposal company.
Correct, yes.
And I share the same concerns in terms of what about, you know, having blades buried around or in on the landscape, et cetera. But I just also want to make sure we're not headed down a direction where we're getting beyond our authority in terms of what we can do down the road.
I think that, I don't know that blade disposal is really in our wheelhouse right now, but I think it's important to know where they're going, and I think that's mm-hmm. a fine thing to ask. So
I agree.
All righty. I don't have a lot more questions on the actual improvements and the landowner engagement and all of that. It seems like you guys, I would like a copy of the letter maybe that you sent to the landowners, just so I can see kind of how these projects are being described to the public and to the people who are impacted by them the most. But kind of separate from this, I wanted to just take this opportunity to ask a little bit in the certification, Mr. DiDonata mentions the ALDS and that this facility will be kind of prepped for it. Is there any more of a status report that somebody can provide on in terms of your plans for incorporating that technology?
Jeff?
Yeah. Thank you, Commissioner. So happy to say that this project had received its Federal Aviation Administration determination to no hazard for the repowering of the longer blades. Additionally, while we're doing this work, an ADLS compatible light will be installed on all required turbines to have lighting. This is in anticipation of our requirement to have ADLS installed by the end of 2021. And I'm happy to say we are on schedule to have Baldwin have ADLS installed on Baldwin by that requirement timeline.
Did you ask the FAA to approve your lighting plan, ADLS lighting plan?
So we're still working with the FAA on the actual ADLS lighting plan. The current lighting plan that is there today was approved again by the FAA. So the process will just be to preemptively put the newer technology light fixture on the turbines, so that way when ADLS is ultimately installed, that there no more up tower work will need to be conducted.
I see. Did you consider just doing all of it now, or what would be the reasons not to do that?
For ADLS, really is the backlog of work, I would say, is our biggest critical path right now. So we are in the queue, working with our vendors to secure our radar installations. Once the analysis is complete, that will then be subsequently filed with the FAA for review.
Okay.
But that process is in motion today.
Do you have any time frame in mind for when you think you'll file with the FAA?
I would hope this year. I would say before the holidays, the FAA would receive that application.
Okay. And then how long is the line for with the vendors? The queue?
I wouldn't have information in front of you, but I'd be happy to follow up.
Okay. That would be great. Just curious how backed up they are. All right. Double checking here. I don't think I have any more questions. Do you guys?
So we will be getting a copy of the letter that was sent to the participating landowners?
That's correct, yes.
And then, so from here on out, really what you're looking for from us is altering the language in the initial order. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Because I don't think, do we have an approval to make on this? Maybe that's part of the original order, too. Where
that
they
maybe
had to
I'm
get approval from us for any changes, but I think we've subsequently delegated that to you guys.
Okay, I can look into that. I'm not 100% sure what.
Casey, are you expecting any sort of approval necessary from us on this?
We're not commissioner. Okay. No,
I didn't think so either. But so it's just a changing of the order.
That's correct. Yes.
It is good to have these discussions so we fully understand what you're doing. I know that these will probably be occurring in other places, and people will come to us with questions. So being in the know about what your plans are, even if it's not required, is probably really good practice just to save everybody trouble.
And we can make sure for future filings, Commissioner, too, that we very clearly spell that out. We had included that information just generally in the cover letter along with the filing, but mm-hmm. if it's more helpful to have that information within the certification itself, we can do that with future filings.
Yeah, I guess I don't have a preference on what method, but just, yeah, having the info is really helpful.
Does that mean we should anticipate other situations like this where there's similar discrepancy between property lines as opposed to non-participating property lines?
Not that I'm immediately aware of.
Well, I thought that was what you were referring to.
I was referring to more repowering projects occurring.
Yeah, I believe in the past filing that we did for Ashtabula, we kind of addressed that discussion in a separate filing as well, not within the certification, but if we can take a look at the language okay. that's been used just to make sure that it's very clear.
Thanks, Casey.
Well, I agree that it is good that you come in with this. I appreciate that. I also appreciate that even though I sense your interpretation is that you'd technically be okay without us doing anything, that you didn't just ignore the issue and brought it to our attention so we can address it and think through what implications it might have in some other situations that we probably have still coming before us and that sort of thing. So thank you for being forthright to the company.
Mr. Chairman, I'll turn it back to you.
Okay, thank you. Brian, this is already a part of the record, so it would not be considered newly introduced evidence. Is that correct?
I don't think so. I think a blanket making sure that any of the testimony or exhibits handed out or docketed becoming part of the record would cover it and would be something that I would ask, you know, be said, and just to make sure nobody objects to anything that was said or handed out today becoming part of the record, and that'll cover it.
Okay. All right. The audio recording of this proceeding, as well as any handouts reviewed, will now be considered evidence. Are there any objections to this evidence becoming part of the official record upon which a decision will be reached? Staff?
None from staff.
No objection.
And the evidence as presented will now become a part of the official record upon which a decision will be made. Are there any other matters for the record?
I have nothing additional. Thank you.
Nothing. Okay.
Seeing none, this informal hearing is now closed. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you for being available on the phone to everybody.
Thank you, Commissioners, for your time.
Thank you for your time.
All right. Have a good day.
Thank you.